Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us this evening. We are here on a Monday evening, just after Valentine's Day, and we're going to be talking about the heart. I have Dr. Dennis Goodman with me. He is an MD, and we are going to be talking about magnesium and heart disease. He has been named one of the America's Best Doctors. He is board certified in cardiology and integrative medicine, and he is a clinical associate professor at NYU. And he's formulated his own natural cardiac multivitamin, and he also authored a new book from Square One Publishers called Magnificent Magnesium, which the link to that book to be able to purchase it is directly on today's show page. So today we're going to be talking about heart disease. You know, heart disease, everybody says, I'm just waiting for that heart attack, or, oh, we all take medications in our family, it's no big deal, and, you know, everybody gets it, and, oh, you got to die of something. You know, every time I hear somebody say that, I just want to go through the roof. We got to die of something. Well, I don't want to be dying of no heart attack, you know? But if you can look and see all of these little things that you can do easily along the way, that imminent heart attack, you don't have to be looking for it every day, but you also don't have to be abusing your body every day. I live in New Orleans, land of brown and white food. They abuse their heart every day. It gets 110, 120 in the summer. Their heart has to pump hard every day. And then look, and then they drink a lot, and they have a lot of other habits and ways that they do about their life. And those put stress on their heart every day. So today we're going to be talking about heart disease and magnesium. Dr. Dennis is with us, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today, Doctor.
Thanks, Dr. Jeanette. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, you know, I think that it is such a big, important thing to talk about magnesium with heart disease. But, you know, we're coming, like we said, off of Valentine's Day, and there are so many aspects we'll have time to talk about in this show is about the heart and disease. And sometimes it's not always just you have high blood pressure and let's pop a pharmaceutical, or you have some clogged arteries and let's just throw in a few stents. Really, it has a lot about vitamins and nutritions and minerals, and also about your emotional state, and also about your stress state, don't you think so? I know in your book, Magnificent Magnesium, you talk about all of these things.
No, 100%. You're spot on. I think it's just unfortunate that human nature is such that people really start focusing on health when something goes wrong, they've got a family member or friend where something terrible happens. That's when people, you know, have the fear factor and they think about their health. But that's most people. But, you know, the truth is if we were able early on to really focus on being healthy and focusing on the things you mentioned, nutrition and exercise, and exercise, I also talk about, to me, exercise is not only just aerobic exercise, but flexibility and being able to move and keeping your joints flexible. And the third is what I call the emotional stress situation, which so I sit with my patients and I talk about nutrition, exercise, and stress management. And that's every single person, whether they've got cardiovascular disease or they're at risk or they just want to know how to be healthy. And we were talking before the show, it takes a lot of time to do that. And doctors are under enormous pressure now because, unfortunately, physicians are not well compensated for sitting and talking to patients. They compensated for quick prescription, next patient, or procedures, and the system gets turned on its head. I think people should be rewarded for keeping people healthy. I'm sure you know this, but you know, in some of the Asian countries, I think they pay the doctor if the patient's healthy. And when the patient's sick, you come to the doctor and he doesn't charge you. So.
That's absolute truth.
It makes sense. So,
you know, And we look so many times and people just think that the heart is just something that needs a drug or something they have to fix it. But they're always looking outside of themselves to fix their heart. They never, ever think that they have any control over that heart. I mean, you can look just at the Valentine's Day thing. How many people, their emotions, their stress, all of those things all contribute to your heart health. You know, if you can just turn around and say, I'm really stressed out. Well, you just burn through your vitamin C that you had this morning in 10 minutes. So what are you going to do with the rest of the day? And how much vitamin C and magnesium do you have for the rest of the day? It's gone. Your body does not make these things, and they don't understand that they actually have to be participating in providing it to their heart. Your heart is not just something that pumps in your chest and you think, like, you know, oh, well, when I hit the wall, I hit the wall. It's what makes you go every second.
100%. And it applies not only to natural things like, you know, magnesium, vitamin C, and the vitamins and minerals that we have to take, but medications, for example. You know, unfortunately, there are times people need to be on statins. And I tell the patients, you know, you can't think because you're now on a medication that's a strong lipid-lowering agent that now you can eat what you like. And I always tell them, you can out-eat your statin. And it's the same with anything that we put in, you know, we put in our mouths for, quote, therapeutic reasons. But, the whole thing about magnesium, things like vitamin C, we need them for the cells to function properly in a healthy body. And when the body's not healthy and there's disease, you need even more. Because just like you said, when the body's stressed, then things you need to obviously require more energy just to function properly, and then you burn up your magnesium. You get magnesium depletion. So I tell patients, we'll talk about magnesium in a minute, but when they are feeling stressed or there are chronic disease processes, to bump up the dose of the magnesium.
You know, people so many times keep looking at their RDA for healthy people. And if you actually look at it, if you're a mother and you're standing there yelling at your kids for 10 minutes a day, you're, quote, no longer healthy. If you are a man and you're just driving down the street and you're getting all this trouble with driving or you miss your train or whatever it might be, you just burned out all yours, so you don't have any left for the day either. So you're running a deficit all the time, and who really is, quote, healthy anymore? So I think sometimes when we look at the amounts that we need to take of vitamins or nutrients or minerals, we really need to look at something that's a little bit higher sometimes too, because you can't say, I'm going to take a test today and I'm going to know today what I'm going to need because I'm going to repeat this pattern every single day, when it really doesn't.
There's no question the RDAs for magnesium, you know, only about 300 milligrams for women and 400 for men. It's just not enough. And you clearly have to take a lot more to keep the cells functioning properly. I want to just point out that's so important for the listeners. The thing that's important about magnesium is it's the most important mineral that our body needs. And you can't make it in the body. That's why it's so important that you take it in your diet. And here's the problem, and I want to read you something. I found this so fascinating, and I like to share it. I'm going to read you something, Jeanette.
Mm-hmm.
To quote, do you know that most of us today are suffering from certain dangerous diet deficiencies which cannot be remedied until depleted soils from which our food comes are brought into proper mineral balance? The alarming fact is that foods, namely fruits, vegetables, and grains, now being raised on millions of acres of land that no longer contain enough of certain minerals are starving us, no matter how much of them we eat. So I'll tell you, that sounds like, right? Sounds like the truth, which it is. But that comes from the 74th Congress, second session of the Senate in 1936. So even then they realized we've got a big problem with farming practices. And we haven't been able to solve the problem. And so even if you are eating the foods that do contain a lot of magnesium, and of course it's so important for people to know what they are, even if you take a lot of those foods, if they're not being grown in soil, that's good soil, you can still be magnesium deficient. So can I just touch on the foods that contain magnesium? Pumpkin seeds, spinach, Swiss chard, soybeans, sesame seeds, black beans, quinoa, cashew, sunflower seeds, beet greens, black chocolate. And I always like to give people information when I'm on the radio or when I'm lecturing. And there's a website called whfoods.org. This is a nonprofit organization, and they've got a list of all the different foods and how much magnesium they contain. But I have found in my practice, because I check magnesium levels on every patient, that even some people who are taking a lot of the vegetables still are deficient. And it's because, unfortunately, they're getting their foods and they're getting their vegetables from farming in depleted soils. So it's a real problem, and this is one of my things that I want to work on, is trying again to get to Congress to look at this very seriously and see if we can ask the farmers to put some magnesium back in the soil. And one of the things you have to do is to have rotating crops, which a lot of them don't do. Whereas the farmers' markets and, you know, organics supposed to be better, but it's a real issue.
I think it's a real issue, and I've seen that myself here in Louisiana, because a lot of these farms are underneath chemical plants, or they are, you know, when we had Hurricane Katrina here, you know, everything was under this very toxic water for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks. Mm-hmm. And then when it dried out, all of those heavy metals and all those toxins deposited into the soil, and they said, okay, good, well, we're just going to put up some farms here. And it's like, really? You know, and because all of these things, whatever is in your air or in your water, will end up into the soil, and those heavy metals and those chemicals end up leaching on and latching on to the vitamins and minerals that are in the food, and they don't end up being the same compound anymore. You know, arsenic and mercury and lead and cadmium and even some of the radiation factors they have a really great affinity to snag on to a mineral and a vitamin, because the minerals and vitamins are so active that they render them inactive. That's why when you buy from one of the big box stores, if you buy their cabbage, you cannot ferment it to be able to make sauerkraut. It doesn't happen. It's already been locked up, and there's nothing else that's going to produce that. So when people are, you know, a lot of times they'll also say, well, I saw it on there, oh, broccoli cures breast cancer, and I'm going to have broccoli. And it's in my frozen food out of my freezer in my TV dinner that I'm now going to put in my microwave. And it's like, are you really kidding me? Forget it. You just forget that out of your head, because it did nothing for you. And that is a really long haul to talk about food.
Where do you recommend your listeners go to get healthy food, and what are you doing in New Orleans?
And see, what I'm doing here, it is a very hard deal. I don't go to the farmers markets here, and I don't go to some of the bigger stores. What I do is buy some of them frozen, and then I'll get a few that I know that are very local that are sold at this one small grocery store. Other than that, I just stay away from it altogether. And what I've started to do is I do a lot of nutrient-dense powders and oils, which are probably, I think we talked about before on some of the shows. And when you start putting those nutrient-dense things in, it kind of supplements and will bring it in heavier. Because it's incredible, you know. I had said one show before with the big box store with the W, I went and I wanted to get an onion, and I looked at the sticker and I took a picture of it. And then I went to the other big box, so supposedly good paycheck store, and it had the exact same onion with the exact same sticker. So people are under this conceptual idea that those places that look healthy, that charge a lot for, quote, organic, healthy food that everybody's swarming to once they walk in the door, they don't necessarily always have the right food either. You really need to be a person who needs to know where it's coming from, because you're going to get the same thing at one place or another. You're just going to pay triple for it.
Exactly.
And it's incredible. Well, let's talk about magnesium. You know, I have a big poster in my office I had, and it had, you know, thousands of different chemical reactions in the body. A plus B equals C. If everybody remembers that, the listeners from chemistry, you know, you have two components, and they make a product. So if we think about the body, you know, your thyroid hormones plus something else will give you an active thyroid. But you always have to have what we call cofactors. In other words, if I put an egg outside and the sun comes down, something's got to react with it to be able to make it fry, that would be hot pavement, or something's got to make something else go. And that's where we talk about magnesium. Magnesium, vitamin C, zinc, and those are the three most important things that have to that are most cofactors. So if you're asking your body to do 100,000 reactions today, and you've only given it enough magnesium to do 10, I don't think it's going to work, right? And then don't you think that we find all these other diseases, sometimes those symptoms fall away when you start putting in magnesium?
No, absolutely. You're 100% right. We should tell the listeners that magnesium is the most important cofactor for energy production for the conversion of ADP to ATP, which is kind of the building block, the ADP. And then to get the energy, it's like the gasoline in the car. Your car can't go without gasoline, and you need to convert to ATP for those cells to have energy. There are more than 350 enzyme systems, and it affects every body system. So a lot of times people are having non-specific symptoms, things like fatigue, muscle cramps, muscle aches, the bowel dysmotility, a lot of constipation. You get palpitations in the heart. You get headaches. You get insomnia, anxiety and depression from the psychiatric standpoint. So, and fibromyalgia has been associated with it. So we've got all these non-specific symptoms, and people just sort of accept it as part of aging or not taking care of yourself properly. And then if it's left unchecked, as you're pointing out, it eventually lands up with serious diseases. So there's an increased incidence of cardiovascular disease, atherosclerosis, heart attacks and strokes, diabetes, obesity, the immune system. So it is so important that people don't allow their magnesium levels to get really, really low. And how do you know? Well, if you've got symptoms, you can just take magnesium and see what happens. If you think you're fine and you want to check yourself out, you can have a red blood cell magnesium check. One thing we should point out, serum magnesium is not a good way to see what your magnesium level is, because only 1% of the magnesium in the body is in the serum. So if you say to your doctor, please check my magnesium level, and he gets a serum magnesium level, that's not helpful. You need to get a red blood cell magnesium. And that's not perfect, but it's better than anything else we've got. Some people talk about hair analysis. I'm not really into that. It's hard to find a good lab to do that. You have to send it out of state a lot of times. So I think red blood cell magnesium is the best way to go. And I have had many, many patients where I put them on magnesium. I'm going to give an example of someone 3 weeks ago, a young man in his 30s, come to me with blood pressure of 160 over 90 and palpitations. I'm very, very holistic in that I always want to try natural approaches first before any medication. And I said, let's talk about all the things we can try to do to get your blood pressure down. Let's try to think about what's causing it. And then we spoke about magnesium, and I said, let's try this. I got his magnesium level. It was very low. Put him on magnesium. 3 to 4 weeks later, he came and told me that he's feeling like he hasn't felt so good in years, and his blood pressure was 130 over 80. So it's so important to realize, wouldn't you rather take magnesium than be on a medication for blood pressure? Not that I would put anybody on just, you know, first time on a blood pressure medication, but he could easily have landed up on a blood pressure medication with a blood pressure like that after not coming down with lifestyle changes. And one thing that's so important to realize is magnesium is a natural calcium channel blocker. Calcium channel blockers are, as you know, one of the groups of drugs that we use to treat high blood pressure. So if you can use something natural like magnesium to be the calcium channel blocker, that's a lot better than having to take a medication. So I try very, very hard to get people to think about not just magnesium, but nutrition and eating healthy. What you mentioned is 100% correct. Vitamin C, zinc, magnesium, we unfortunately, it's very hard to get that, right? In the diet, you've got to supplement. And I also I give a lot of B12 because that's another thing that's hard to get. So I think you're absolutely right.
You know, it's so incredible because here after Katrina, everybody in the world went on high blood pressure medication. And I mean everybody. It almost seemed like you would not see anyone without it because of the stress. What they didn't realize is that the stress was further depleting them. And then the doctor would just say, hey, it's up today, just take the drug. And there is no... no thought whatsoever other than this is the number, here you get your drug. And now the factor and the problem is, you know, what is it, maybe 8-9 years later, is that now these people are still taking this drug and they've never gone off of it because they've never sat back and said, maybe I need to look at my PTSD. Maybe I need to look at my diet. Right. Maybe I need to look at where I'm at, because all of those things in life do affect people. And, you know, there are a lot of things going on in the world now, you know, with people losing their houses or the economy or their jobs or whatever, and everybody seems to be so afraid of their insurance. They've got to have insurance because someone's going to save them. When really, if you look at it, they're so afraid that they are going to have a heart problem, and they are, that fear is driving the train. And I'm guaranteed if you're on a fear-driven train, you're going to go to the track and you're going to go to the station that you want to go to. And I think what you and I are saying is, hey, let's slow down that train. Let's take the label off of it and let's see what we can do to be able to have it meander. Maybe we don't need a train, you know. Maybe we don't need to hit that wall. Maybe we can just say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to feel better if I do something simple. You know, magnesium is in foods, so maybe you could also tell us about, there are different types of magnesium to take. I know they have it on TV now. Everybody wants to be taking this one that's, oh, if you don't have a bowel movement every day, you need to be taking this stuff. And it's like, right. Oh, my Lord, you know, and you just want to shut that one down, you know.
So, you know, obviously it's like everything else, there's marketing. The one that I like is called magnesium malate from Jigsaw, and it's actually the slow release. You see, the problem is when you put a bolus of magnesium into the stomach, it attracts water. It loves water. So what happens is certain magnesiums, like magnesium hydroxide, are used as laxatives because you heard of milk of magnesia. That's what it is. So if you've got your tendency to lose bowels, you certainly don't want to take that magnesium. You want to take something that ends in ATE. There are quite a few out there. There's a website, magdoctor.com, where they've got Jigsaw, and I think they're doing something now where they'll send people, if they get that particular magnesium, they get a free book of my magnificent magnesium. But I tell people, just go and discuss it wherever you're getting your vitamins, and make sure that you're talking to them about, well, what are the side effects, and the major side effect for most people is loose stools. So I can tell you with the Jigsaw, I don't have a problem with it because it's slow release. But you also have to watch the dose, because obviously if you're taking a very high dose, you need to cut it back. My recommendation is that you're taking at least 3 milligrams per pound of magnesium. So that's a minimum. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you should be taking 600 milligrams. I put a lot of patients, because of what we're talking about, Jeanette, the stress, they're on 5. So I have some people taking 1,000 milligrams a day. It sounds like a lot, but you know what?
Yeah.
If you can tolerate it, it's absolutely fine. The only risk for magnesium in terms of potential toxicity is patients with kidney problems, renal failure. So I always tell people, talk to your doctor, make sure you know what your blood tests are, especially if you know somebody with other problems like diabetes. But it turns out magnesium deficiency is one of the risk factors for diabetes. And I think what you're pointing out so well, Jeanette, is when you have other conditions that stress the body, then you need to be, you get the magnesium deficient even quicker, because your cells are trying to, you know, there's dysfunction. So it's important that you're actually keeping these magnesium levels in good range. And I can tell you, I've got so many patients who come back and they tell me how much better they're feeling. So I think there's the whole issue of just not feeling good. One of the places I found it very helpful is for headaches and for insomnia. So I've had people who haven't been able to sleep. You know, they've been taking drugs to try to sleep, and I say, let's try you on a nice, good dose of magnesium at night. I've had several patients that are now sleeping because it actually acts as a relaxant. So there's many, many benefits, and my book's full of all the different conditions that are associated with magnesium deficiency. We spoke about a red blood cell magnesium. I like to see the level above 5.5 milligrams per deciliter. And I'm going to come back to one thing we spoke about earlier. I think you clearly hit on this all the time, you know, when you talk in your shows. The risk of dying from a heart attack and stroke is 1 in 2, 50% for men. And what do you think it is for women, Jeanette?
It's got women to be more.
Women think that it's not as high, because they're mainly worried about breast cancer. That's
right.
Their biggest fear. The risk for women dying of heart disease is the same. It's also 50%. So I always tell people we have to educate women that they've got to be checked out. It's, you know, they're very good about going for mammograms, but they don't go to the doctor and say, check me out for my risks for heart disease. And there's a 1 in 8, it's high, 1 in 8 chance of getting breast cancer and 1 in 36 of dying from it. But there's a 1 in 2 chance of dying from cardiovascular disease.
And
so
I think that
trying to throw all these things out so people realize how important it is to take good care of your cardiovascular system.
But I think also, too, when you go to the doctor, you really have to find a doctor that is attuned to what you need for yourself. In other words, if you don't get the answers you're looking for, you really need to ask more. Because when you take your, they take your blood pressure and you're in a hurry, you just ran there, you know you have to hurry up and get the kids, of course your blood pressure is high. But they don't ask you all of that reasons. They'll just give you a prescription. And you yourself really have to be responsible for it for yourself. And we talk about the choice of magnesium. I myself recommend Ancient Minerals, the transdermal magnesium spray, which I find is really great. Yeah, so many people, they say, you know, my legs are jumping. And I see all these diabetic patients, especially in this town. You can go to church, and every single person in there is just swinging that leg like nobody's business. And it's like, my goodness, just spray their leg down with magnesium, and it stops. It's like a magic thing, you know? And it almost like it's, I use that as my first thing. I'll say, I don't have a magnesium problem. Hey, just spray their legs from their knee to their ankle, both of them down with magnesium oil. Tell them to have a seat. Take their blood pressure before and after. You will see a tremendous difference. They're like, well, I guess you maybe have something there, you know? And it's so simple. Even with Epsom salt baths. You know, and you have Epsom salts listed in your book, too, because, you know, how many times, you know, the elderly, they can't even get in a bathtub anymore. Well, I tell them just to take a plastic garbage can, pour Epsom salts in it, and stick your feet in.
Put your feet in, exactly. Leave it for 20 minutes. You put some soda, you know, some baking soda as well. And
it's incredible.
No, you know, people who do it, they'll tell you, I've got patients that say, you know what, once a week or twice a week I have my magnesium, my Epsom salt bath, and I feel so relaxed, and I feel so good.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about that's interesting, you know, I know people are very, very sort of savvy about vitamin D these days. They know that we got to get our vitamin D levels up. A lot of physicians check vitamin D routinely. But the data for increasing vitamin D and benefit is very controversial. It's coming under attack again. I'm not saying you shouldn't raise your vitamin D. I give people vitamin D3. But the magnesium story is much more powerful. There's clear cut. I haven't, you know, every single, you know, when you go research magnesium and you'll see tens of thousands of articles, you'll see this constant message coming through that the people with the highest levels of magnesium have the lowest risk.
And so it's incredible.
Yeah, different. And why do you think, and you know, we were speaking about this before, why do you think people just don't know about it? I mean, I've got my own ideas. We're just talking about it. I think, you know, if you speak to most people off the street, they'll say, I don't know what you're talking about. And then when they go speak to their doctors, they also say, hey, no, you know, they've heard of it and they think about it as something that they use for preeclampsia, toxemia or in pregnancy. And, you know, we used to use it when patients were having heart attacks and cardiac arrest. We were giving a gram of magnesium for the arrhythmias, but most physicians aren't aware how important it is. It's just a very, very important thing to supplement if you're not getting enough, you know, in the diet. And even then, as I said, you can still be deficient. So I think my theory, I don't know, Jeanette, what you think, but, you know, the drug companies have the power because they've got the money to advertise. And so they can, you know, people watch TV, millions of people, and they get educated. But it's educated, unfortunately, usually with prescription drugs. And so who's going to be able to afford putting, you know, ads on TV for magnesium? There are some, but a lot of the vitamin companies, they can't afford it. And they certainly can't afford to pay for the research, you know, that it costs to try to have these big double-blind randomized trials to prove it. But you
and
know,
something,
I know,
you know, you can't always say, too, everybody is such an individual. You could say, this person sitting in front of me has 248,000 enzyme reactions that need magnesium. The next one sitting next to them, they need 478,000. Next one next to them, 148,000. You will never, ever be able to standardize from one person to another. Absolutely not, because once you open your mouth, once you even use your brain, once you're moving your muscles, I mean, I try to explain to people, they're like, oh, my muscles are so tight, magnesium. My muscles are twitching, magnesium. I have a headache, magnesium. Oh, my fingers, they feel numb, magnesium. Oh, my heart, I have palpitations. You know, is there anything we can't say? Every single thing in your body uses magnesium. It just is.
You know what? I get migraine headaches, and at times I had one so bad about a few weeks ago that I actually couldn't function in my office, and I went to see a neurologist up the road from me who's a holistic integrative neurologist. I didn't want to start with the pills. And I got a 1 gram of intravenous magnesium. Within 2 hours, my headache was gone. Now, I'm not saying everybody should go do that, but it just proves, you know, when you see it for yourself and you realize that that made a huge difference, because it obviously allowed my blood vessels, for whatever's going, we still don't understand exactly what happens with migraine, the vasomotor tone disturbances, but magnesium is one of the major things you can take if you're a headache sufferer, and you may find yourself with significant relief. And, you know, there's a doctor, a neurologist here in New York who's an expert on migraines, very holistic, a Dr. Mousecop, and he talks about magnesium all the time.
And, you know, I myself have had them, you know, for decades. And so many times I can remember going to the emergency room with my kids because I was a single parent. And they're like, we'll have to wait for child services because once we give you this drug, you know, someone's got to take your kids. And it's like, I'm out of here, you know. No way. I'm going, you know. So there's a lot of times, you know, as parents and women, we struggle through these things when really if you can – I can tell you I've used magnesium in very high doses, and it doesn't take it away, but it does curb it enough that I can function, that I can drive home, or enough that I can pick up the kids, or enough that I can move to the next spot. Because I was a dental hygienist for, you know, 30 years before I was a naturopathic doctor. And I'll tell you, pinpointing on a little tiny point on somebody's teeth for 10 hours a day just blew you know, my migraines to smithereens. I mean, I was just done. I was cooked. You know, as you start to be able to learn these things, that maybe that was a heavy metal issue, or you learn all these different things. And I think when people say, "Do I take magnesium and all my, I'm going to be roly poly and I'm fabulous and nothing's going to be wrong with me," and that's not what you and I are saying. What you and I are saying is that give the body what it needs, give it a little bit extra, and then stand back and wait.
Right. I mean, you don't want to give yourself one hand behind your back before you start, because the cells can't function properly. And we, you know, one of the other things that always comes up is, you know, a lot of women are taking calcium for their bones. Well, it turns out, you've seen some of the information coming out, that there's, you know, there was this big thing starting to come out in retrospective meta-analysis, that there was a sphere of increased cardiovascular disease with too much calcium. And I believe it's related to the fact that you're taking calcium without magnesium. You need them. They work together. You can't allow calcium to be unopposed, because it goes into the cells and goes into blood vessels. The magnesium prevents this calcium influx. Calcium influx causes cells to contract. It causes vasospasm. We need calcium for the heart to contract. But if you don't have the other side, which is the relaxing side of it, you know, when something contracts, it's got to relax, so it contracts again. And that's why one of the causes for high blood pressure, one of the causes is magnesium deficiency, because you get too much calcium. And that's why you have a whole group of drugs called calcium channel blockers. I mentioned this. Because they're blocking the influx of calcium into the cells, and that makes that acts as a vasodilator, allowing your blood vessels to dilate. There's another very well-known physician by the name of Jay Cohen. He wrote a book, The Magnesium Solution for High Blood Pressure. So this is not like, you know, kind of kooky stuff, you know, flaky. Mm-hmm. It's well-known. And he quotes all the studies that show that how powerful magnesium is in lowering blood pressure. So I think that even people who are taking all these pills, if they get their magnesium levels up, maybe you cut back on some of your pills. But that's a conversation that you have with your doctor.
And a lot of times, too, a lot of these emotional things where people are going to mental health practitioners, their first step in the door, they're turning around and getting these anti-this or anti-that, when really, a lot of times, if they had even looked at the balance in their body and figuring out, well, if I'm depressed, maybe I just don't have enough of this. You know, most depressed people are inside people. They're not eating well. They're not taking care of themselves. So there you go. You know, you're deficient in what? Let's look at that first instead of giving another anti-thing, because you're exactly right. I mean, you can't take a seesaw and consistently be pounding it down on one end and still saying that you're missing on the other. You can't overload. Yeah. Now, what you and I are both saying, too, is magnesium. You really want to try to get it in your foods, and you'll be able to get it, you know, and you don't want to overload. You're not saying, I want you to take 3,000 and 4,000 of magnesium.
No.
Because then we both know that will just tip that scale again, and you'll be on the other end of the seesaw.
Right.
So
totally,
that's not where you
balance.
Want to be.
Totally, totally. It's very much, you know, the balancing act. I think you're hitting on something so important as well, which, you know, when you treat whatever it is that you're treating, the most important thing I teach the students is all the time is not just to put the Band-Aid on, because we can get rid of symptoms. We want to ask, what's the etiology? What is causing the problem? Because if you can find the problem and you can treat it without a medication, or you can deal with a stress issue that's causing, I was telling you before the show about a patient that I had years and years ago, where a friend of mine who's a lung specialist said, please, while I see his father, who was in Seattle at the time, because he's having palpitations and getting more and more fatigued and depressed, and nobody can find anything, and they tell him, you know, it's in your head, and it's getting worse and worse. And eventually he came down with his whole family to San Diego, where I was at the time, to see me, and they all came into my office, and I examined him, and I looked at all the studies, and true enough, there was no structural heart disease. But I realized something's wrong here. The heart's trying to talk to him, and then does he have what I call broken heart syndrome? And I brought it up, and he denied it. But then his daughter pulled me out of the room, and she said he's been having a fight with his son for 6 months, who's now moved to Vegas. And it's killing him. And eventually I was able to say to him, you know what, this is what's causing your problem probably. And I told him, you've got to go straight from here to Vegas. And that's the most important thing you can do. Otherwise, you're really going to be seeing the cardiologist for something like a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They forced him to go, and he went, and his son saw him. And 2 weeks later, I got a beautiful letter from him telling me that he's feeling much, much better. His palpitations were gone. So that's an example of how easy it would have been to put him on a beta blocker, put him on medicine, put him on antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
But his problem was a psychological stress. And if you can take enough time and bring it out and get the person to accept it, you can change it, not temporarily, not just with pills, but you actually change the whole cause for the problem. You get rid of it. You treat it. So I try very hard in my practice to think about that every time I'm dealing with any issue. Is there a cause that I can treat effectively? And we both know, I'd say a good 60-70% of the time there's emotional stress as a major factor. So
I think
you've got to dig that out, but it's very, very difficult. And
you
and I know sometimes you send someone to a psychiatrist who we really turn to try to help us with this, and they're so pressured, and they're putting people on pills a lot of time because they don't have enough. There was an article in the New York Times a few years ago. They don't have time to talk to the patient.
Myself, when I'm working with patients, I find so many times that within 5 seconds, you know, the patient will say, oh, I'm really agitated. I don't want to talk to you. And I'll say, fabulous. I'm so thrilled you said that, because you know what? Now we have something to start to work on. What is agitating you? And that sometimes is their inner core of what's really bothering them that they came in with. It's just that they didn't want to say it to you, or they wanted to push it off. So a lot of times we look at fear. Fear is the biggest thing. I think 99.9% of the people run their life on fear. You know, your fear of going to the doctor, your fear of what he's going to say, your fear of I'm going to die tomorrow.
30.
You know?
So, Jeanette, you know what fear stands for? The initials F-E-A-R. It's one of my favorite things that I once heard.
What is it?
False expectations appearing real.
Yes.
If you think about it like that, you'll realize that most of the time it's totally, it's a false expectation. It's not necessary to fear something that's actually not going to happen. So that, to me, makes it so much easier to deal with it and say, you know what, you don't have to have fear because it's a false expectation.
Yes.
If you actually analyze it properly and you look at it, you know, and look at it realistically, you don't have to fear it. I mean, you know people who fear flying. It's a terrible fear.
Mm-hmm.
It incapacitates and they can't fly. They become, you know, and it's not something you say, don't be fearful, they're fearful. But if you think of the reality of it, the risk of having a problem on an aeroplane is thousands mm-hmm. times less than driving your car on the road.
Right.
They cause havoc, right, with the system.
And I think sometimes the wear and tear of that word fear, my biggest thing is, and my number one mantra and everything for every patient I talk to, as I said, what is your greatest fear? That's number one. And number two is, okay, you get 1 hour a day, and I want to know what time it's going to be, and I want you to run through that fear. I want you to sit down and cry about it. I want you to yell about it. I want you to kick and scream. I want you to do everything you want to do about it. Because when it comes to 1 minute after that hour, it doesn't have power over you anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's no more time in the day. Because people
right.
take that fear, and if they're using it for 24 hours, that's really putting a stress on their heart. It's putting a stress on their whole body. But if
on
you can say you only have 1 hour, and then 1 minute after that hour, I don't want to hear it anymore. You're done with it. And that is such a powerful thing.
Can they talk about it for an hour, or they meditate for an hour, or they just
do whatever
you
want.
Focus on that and nothing else?
Yeah. And, I mean, I've had patients, you know, they're like beating the heck out of their pillows. You know, they're punching the walls. They're laying down. The best one, 75-year-old people, laying on the floor, kick and scream. Because then it releases all that garbage. All that toxic crap goes out of your body. I'm done with it. Do you think after 7 days of laying on the floor, kicking and screaming, you're going to say, you know what? Okay, I'm done with that. What next? Then they
right.
can look at where they're at. And it's such a release to be able to say, oh, okay, I've got it, I'm good, rather than carry that baggage around. The biggest thing is God does not sign for UPS. So if you think you're bringing your baggage with you ahead of time, it's not going to happen. So you best get rid of it now.
And then, you know, obviously exercise is such a good way to try to deal with the stress as well, because it forces, you know, you feel good, especially afterwards. And then things like biofeedback and yoga, anything where you're breathing, and I think what your point is well taken,
mm-hmm.
you get rid of it. You've got to get rid of the toxin. And it is a toxin, you know, that basically gets into your head. And something like yoga where you can focus on the move, on the poses, and you focus on stretching, and you focus on the breathing, actually helps you to get rid of these anxieties.
And also, too, with your heart, you don't have to be so protective of it. You know, a lot of people, they'll say, I'm protecting it. The first thing they'll do is put their hand over it. It's not going to happen to me. I'm going to protect it. You really can't protect it, but what you really do need to do is you really need to nourish it. And that's where you say in the book, you know, magnificent magnesium, you need to nourish it. If you don't nourish it by, you know, taking care of it, you know, you can put your hand over it and say, I'm protecting it all you want, but it's going to do nothing.
No, so, you know, it all comes down to the next question, how do you nourish it? And nourishing every organ in the body, and, you know, obviously I'm very focused on the cardiovascular and the heart. The heart is using more energy than any other organ in the body because it's pumping all the time. Millions of gallons a year. So you have to be able to nourish your heart, and that's emotionally with the right nutrition, and giving it exercise so that it can work. You know, you don't want your heart to be stressed by what we call isotonic exercises. When you're pushing, when you're squeezing and you're lifting heavy weights, your heart has to work really, really hard, right, because the pressure's going so high.
Right.
The key is that you want your heart to be able to be relaxed. So some people, it's not a good thing to be lifting these weights, not if it's causing significant high blood pressure, especially when it's chronic. So
mm-hmm.
I tell people aerobic exercise with lightweight stretching, that's the way to go. That's how you look after your heart. And then you've got to make sure that it's well nourished. And it comes back to my point about magnesium. If your heart's not getting enough magnesium, it can't work properly. And they've shown, there's studies, that when you're magnesium deficient, you have increased inflammation. Increased inflammation is another marker and risk factor for cardiovascular disease. We think atherosclerosis, which is, you know, arteries getting plugged up with fatty deposits, a big part of that is inflammation in the blood vessels. So you want to keep your body as, you know, in, as healthy as possible, minimizing inflammation. And unfortunately, as you've pointed out, we're getting a lot of toxins out there in the environment,
yeah,
and what we eat and what we breathe. So you certainly want to give your body the tools to fight inflammation. You know, with high blood pressure, I keep telling you magnesium deficiency can cause high blood pressure. Well, one of the drugs that people use, that doctors give patients to treat high blood pressure, diuretics. It's one of the first-line agents. Diuretics cause potassium and magnesium deficiency, hydrochlorothiazide. So you're actually causing sometimes the thing that's causing the problem. So it's really important that when you are taking diuretics, you speak to your doctor about supplementing with potassium and magnesium and check your level. And maybe that you just treat, you know, you replete the magnesium and you don't need the diuretic anymore.
And, you know, also finding a doctor like you, too, and be able to also read this book, because in your book, Magnificent Magnesium, you talk about the structure of the heart, the flow of blood. You talk about nutrition. You talk about how things work in different words that you need to know when you are talking about your heart, because a lot of people don't really know what those words mean, and they really put their trust in a doctor. I know my father-in-law, he had a heart attack, and he had his bypass and his stents and all, and they told him to exercise, so he went to the gym all the time on the treadmill. Well, where do you think he died? On the treadmill, on the gym. Because all they did was they just structurally changed out the part. They didn't figure out how it got that way. And that's how that happens, you know. If you don't figure out how you got someplace, then you really can't say, you know, that you're even feeling better, because you're going to constantly... You can plunge that toilet all you want, you know, but it's just going to keep on backing up. But you need to figure out why, you know, and that's
and
so simple to be able
to figure
out. And you
have to make sure you understand how bad the situation is. That's why it's so important when people want to suddenly start exercising, they're going to get into it. You have to, especially if you're not a youngster anymore, go and be checked out first. Whenever I see patients, I'm always saying to them, first, let's see what your current status is of your cardiovascular system. Is there disease? Is there blockages? Are there structural problems? You've got to deal with that before you can say, I just run out and start exercising, because you may be putting your heart under more stress than it can handle. So you've got to know what you're dealing with first, and that's why it's so important to see a physician. That's what it's supposed to be about, coming and getting assessed and checked and pick up things and deal with them, and then work on prevention. And preventing things happening in the first place, and if something has happened, you want to prevent it from happening again. But it takes time, and as you said, you've got to ask questions. You've got to be going to your doctor and saying, look, I've got questions. I want to know what you think. I want to have a conversation and ask the questions. And, you know, the key is to find somebody that wants to sit with you and talk to you and explain it to you. I wrote this book specifically with, quote, the layman in mind. In other words, people that were not educated in medicine. This is not meant, even though I've had so many, you know, lovely emails from physicians and nurse practitioners and nurses saying how they found the book so helpful, and medical students. But I wrote it for somebody to pick up, you know, who doesn't matter what they do, they can actually understand it, because I try to keep it very simple. And I wanted to explain a lot of the terms that doctors use. You know, when people say you've got angina, what does that mean? You've got atrial fibrillation, what does it mean? And so I actually try to use a lot of the common cardiac conditions and talk about them and explain them, and then, you know, move on in the book about how important magnesium is, because all the cells require magnesium to function properly in the body, and specifically and especially the cardiovascular system, because it uses up so much energy, the heart.
And I think long gone is the day of believing that the physician knows it all and you just need to sit there and be the person that's just going to take it. I think really it's now the time to be proactive, and your book is a very good book to take to your doctor and say, you know, I read about this. Can you tell me more about this? And if your doctor doesn't understand it or doesn't want to talk to you about it or just blows you off, then maybe that's the time you need to change the doctor. I mean, we've all been down those roads before. There's some doctors that you just don't need to be putting your trust in, and you need to be able to feel confident that what you're saying, that they're going to listen. You have to have that confidence, don't you think?
Absolutely. And you know what? If you want to have this conversation with your doctors, doctors are scientific. They like to have evidence. I have quoted so many good articles in my book. If your doctor shows any interest at all, you say, can I bring you some articles? Can I bring you a book? Because
right.
It's about educating. Sometimes, you know, we educate on both sides all the time. You know, most people will tell you they learn more from their students than they learn from the book.
Yeah.
So it's having an open mind and being prepared to listen. I think that not only applies to, you know, how you treat somebody, but if you listen to people and patients, you'll often find out what's going on long before you examine them, because they give you all the clues in the history, but the key is to be able to pick it up. You've got to listen. If somebody, you know, just in conversation says they're having hell at work, and you say, oh, well, everybody's stressed at work, but you don't realize they maybe have a coworker that's actually creating such stress for them that
mm-hmm.
they can't function properly, and you don't address that with them, and you don't say, look, this has got to change. How are we going to figure this out? I've actually written letters sometimes to supervisors and bosses and saying to, in a very personal and private way, said, look, I got a patient under extreme stress. It's affecting their heart. There is a situation here at work. You may not even know about it. Is there anything you can do? And you know what? Sometimes it's huge because
yeah.
the supervisor and the boss doesn't even know.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also gives the patient the confidence, too, to have a stronger, what we would call our psychological heart or our soul heart,
right.
to be able to know that someone is co-ing with them and helping them to be able to
right.
be stronger in what you're doing.
No, I think the key is to be able to talk to your physician and really
yes.
take the time to talk about what's going on. And as you said, but if you don't go in and say, do you think I need magnesium? I heard about it. Or do you think I need this? Or do you think I need that? And, you know, what's my cholesterol? And, you know, you
mm-hmm.
have to ask these questions. Because sometimes you'll just get a call that says everything's fine, right? So
yes.
there's nothing to worry about. The labs are normal. But what I tell my patients, you must come in and let's talk about them.
Yes.
You know,
and
I want to go through
times,
this. There's a lot of blood tests.
And a lot of times when they say they're normal, that means that if the level is, let's say, from 80 to 100 and you have a 99, they're still going to say it's normal.
Yeah,
or even
right.
if you have 100, because they're just, all they have is an assistant that runs down,
normal.
And if there's no red flags, they chuck it off as normal. And really, that's not. So that's like you're an inch away from the wall. So do you want to know that or not know that?
Absolutely.
So I think that's a lot about patient empowerment.
There's another issue sometimes, you know, what is normal? Normal is not just what the average
right.
person should have, because normal is
mm-hmm.
not always optimal. And magnesium is a perfect
right.
example. Even red cell magnesium, the normal values, I called the lab and I said, well, how did you decide on what are normal values? And
right.
you know, they basically told me that they took, you know, X number of 100 patients off the street
mm-hmm.
and they said, okay, well, here's the normal, you know, within 90th percentiles, you know, I said, well, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the optimal level. Because people
right.
are magnesium deficient, and they said, you're right.
And even the different locations in the country. You know, I lived in Scottsdale, Arizona. Everybody was green gurus. They drank the green goop. They ate well, everything. You live in another area, all they have
California,
is fried food.
California, they're also much more conscious
right.
of that.
Right. So you can't even, where you live, you're going to get such skewed numbers that people are holding up as the standard, and the standard is really so skewed. Well, Dr. Goodman, it has been, we're right up to the end of the hour. It has been absolute pleasure having you with us. I know you've been very busy, and to come on the show for this amount of time, I really do appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure. I'm totally supportive and believe in what you're doing, and I think you're just offering such a huge benefit to people that listen to your show, because you know, you look at the big picture, and the big
yeah.
picture is, you know, really not a prescription as such, but what can you do to make yourself healthy and be healthy? It's not what the doctor can do. It's what can you do that you can take on board, and you can make most of the changes to any situation by doing things yourself. It's mainly about lifestyle and nutrition and exercise and stress management. And, of course, we need to be able to talk about medications at times and procedures, and you know,
right.
modern medicine is a miracle, but you've got to be, the way you're healthy is not through drugs. the way you be healthy is how you, your lifestyle and your nutrition, stress management. That's my belief.
And it's also about being happy with yourself because, you know, all of the bypasses and everything in the world are not going to save you. If there was a doctor out there or a procedure or a drug that would save you, well, we wouldn't need anybody else, right? So apparently we still haven't found the answer.
No, but there are times, you know, God forbid, you have an artery that's blocked up and then a cardiologist puts a stent in and he opens your
Perfect.
Artery. That is a life-saving procedure.
Absolutely.
And we need that. But what you want to do is try to prevent that. That's much more, you know, that is so much more important if you can avoid this. But once it's happening, you obviously that's not the time to go to the holistic doctor and ask about magnesium. It's the time to go to the emergency room, get a stent. And that's why I try very hard. What I think about as integrated medicine is also traditional and holistic medicine coming together and offering the patient the best therapy, the best medicine at that moment in time. When you've got appendicitis, you need to be in the emergency room.
Absolutely.
When you're talking about, you know, when you're talking about stresses of life and how do I stay healthy and how do I lose weight, you go talk to someone who's going to discuss nutrition.
Mm-hmm. And I think also to have the people on your team to be able to help you, educated people who actually care yourself and like, you know, I do too. But we really need to be there. And people need to seek out these type physicians like you and I are speaking today on the show because they are out there. You just have to look for them.
Absolutely. Anyway, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I know you mentioned my book. It's Magnificent Magnesium, and it's all the information, all the stuff we've spoken about is in my book.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Take care, Dr. Jeanette. Bye.
Have a great day. And the link for today for the show is on today's show page, the link for the book where you can go directly to Amazon and be able to order the book. Also, Dr. Goodman does have a link directly to his website on today's show page. It's been a pleasure to be with us today. If you'd like more information about Dr. Goodman, please do check him out. If you'd like to find out anything more about your heart disease or magnesium or just want to talk about it, I do have several groups where we talk about things like, hey, my heart, I don't feel well. Hey, this doesn't work right. I don't know. Maybe I should look at magnesium. Maybe something's really bothering me in my life and I'm not quite sure what it is. So we do have a lot of private groups that are available. Please check us out at outoftheboxhealthcare.com. You can send me an email directly through that website. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure. And until tomorrow, have a great evening.